Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Curious Advantage podcast. This series is about how individuals and organizations use the power of curiosity to drive success in their lives and organizations, especially in the context of our new digital reality. It brings to life the latest understanding from neuroscience, anthropology, history, behaviorism about curiosity and makes these useful for everyone. My name is Garrick Jones, and I'm one of the co-authors of the book, The Curious Advantage. And today I'm here with my other co-authors, Paul Ashcroft.
Hi.
And Simon Brown.
Hello.
And we're delighted to be joined by Isabel Garvey, who's the managing director of Abbey Road Studios. Hi, Isabel.
Hi, Garrick. It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, Isabel. You are leading and have successfully transformed the world's most famous and oldest recording studio, Abbey Road. You've been named one of the most creative and innovative women by Fast Company, and you're a leader in the tech world and are constantly innovating in the music industry. Can you tell us a little bit about your story and your previous career and the shift to the music industry and Abbey Road?
My career story is one of curiosity, but certainly very serendipitous. I started my life, although I try to bury this very deep now that I'm in the creative industries, but I started my life as an investment banker, actually, and then moved to private equity. And through kind of potluck and serendipity, a headhunter asked me to be a random candidate in a recruitment process for EMI Music, who were then looking for a chief of staff to work for the CEO. And I thought, it was at a moment in my life where I thought, well, people do MBAs for this kind of change. I should go see what it's all about. And needless to say, I got the job. And there commenced my, I think, nearly 15-year career in music. I think I'm very lucky in that I joined the music industry in such an interesting time, a very challenging time, but such an interesting time for the industry, which has led to a very kind of different and meandering career for myself in music.
How, Isabel, has curiosity helped you on this journey, would you say? You mentioned that you've been on a curious journey. And as you just said, if it's a meandering walk, often curiosity pops up and plays a role. How would you say curiosity's been driving you through the journey?
It's played a key role. I mean, even just taking that step from a comfortable finance environment to just go check out the music world, you know, while obviously the music industry is a very compelling place to be, I think I was curious as to how this industry actually worked. We all know from a consumer perspective, but I didn't understand how the business works. So I think curiosity and wanting to see something different drove me there. And then, yeah, as I said, because the industry had went through such change, you know, I joined EMI at a time when digital was 2% of the business. And just for context, it's now well over 60%. And, you know, it was a very turbulent time for the industry. And as such, you kind of had to be curious to be part of the future of the industry or to be part of the next phase in the story, because you know, how this kind of digital transformation was going to play out wasn't immediately clear back in 2011 when I first joined. You know, a lot of my roles involved actually just being incredibly curious about what technology was up to, how consumer behavior was transforming, how new businesses were developing outside of music, and how that would play into music as an industry, right the way from how artists were going to create music and produce music through to how consumers were going to consume. So it's at the center of my career and is kind of what's kept me interested, I would almost say, because the world, the music industry is continually evolving. And so there's always room for thinking what's next. You just can't stand still.
We talk a little bit about the studios itself at Abbey Road. I'm sure many of our listeners have at least heard of it, world famous place as it is. But that comes, I imagine, with some pressure as well to maintain not just the quality and the reputation of what is an amazing brand, but as that also migrates and deals with the new digital reality and the change in music. Can you tell us a little bit about the story there and what's been the journey for Abbey Road?
Absolutely. So I have been at Abbey Road for 5 years, and I got an incredible remit as I went into that role, which was, you know, here is, as you've said, this incredible studio with an amazing legacy that has brand recognition worldwide. but hasn't necessarily been expanded outside of St. John's Wood in Northwest London. So there were a number of things that we've kind of looked at over the last 5 years in terms of expanding the business and facing it forward to a digital future. So, you know, some of the things we did, we expanded the core of the business. We made sure we had more studio capacity and, you know, our heritage spaces or our traditional spaces, you know, including the famous Studio 2, which housed four men from Liverpool for a very long time. They're big spaces that are relatively expensive. And so we kind of cater for people who are, you know, at the top of their career. But we are very cognizant of the fact that we needed to have spaces where people could start their creative journey at Abbey Road as they develop and fall in love with the place and then continue through to our bigger rooms. We have this really fantastic culture of mentorship with our engineers, where the joke at Abbey Road is that it takes longer to become an engineer at the studios than it does to become a doctor. Through that, our engineers, you know, they're exposed to every variety of music from orchestral through to pop, and they're a hugely experienced team. And they, you know, the senior engineers mentor the younger guys. And we thought, you know, how can we actually take that outside the building? And it felt like education was the most authentic way to do that. So we've created a separate business called the Abbey Road Institute that offers a diploma in audio production and engineering. And that's now franchised in 7 countries around the world and doing incredibly well. It's very niche, but really authentic to the brand and what we do. And then we looked at, as you've alluded to, you know, what is the digital future for this studio? So all the time in the back of my mind, as I was kind of trying to create a vision for Abbey Road in the future, is what is a studio going to look like in 20 years' time? And I fundamentally believe that people will still want to come to these, you know, goosebump inspirational places like Abbey Road. But how artists prepare before they come in and after they're with us, you know, is changing rapidly. Technology has really transformed that. I mean, you know, the anecdote I love to tell is that the Beatles, and I hate to keep harping on about the Beatles, but, you know, they would spend 6 months creating an album in the studios. But those days are long gone. Artists now use technology so much that they will have done a lot of preparation before coming in to lay down an album. And some can come in and do it in as short a time as a week and then manage a lot of the post-production with technology. What we wanted to do is align the studio with tech again. And obviously with my digital background, I had been in that very startup world for a long time. And I thought actually the way to connect is to start embracing music tech startups and almost serve two purposes where we get to learn about what the latest music tech is, but in return, we're giving these businesses the network into the music industry and the leg up they need to really accelerate their growth. And the music industry is notoriously difficult to get into as a startup. So we're trying to ease that journey for them. And that's been incredible. We've actually set that up actually almost 5 years ago we've had 15 businesses through, and we've come across really incredible technology. We hit the market at a time where artificial intelligence in particular was really making a step change and starting to get into the creative industries.
Something we talk about within the Curious Advantage book of the Curiosity Engine, which is around sort of how you come up with creative ideas and ask creative questions around, I wonder if, or, you know, what if we did this? And then how you put those ideas into action, into construction, as we call it. Are you working with a really established brand and brought some very non-traditional ideas of going into retail or going into education? How did you bring about that sort of creativity and ask those questions, and how did you take them from questions to actually sort of getting them accepted and putting them into action? I'd love to hear more around that.
It's been an incredible journey. It's been a very interesting journey, and sometimes a tough journey actually. What I was helped with is the team at Abbey Road are all amazingly creative. They're embarrassingly talented, my team, actually, because they do, you know, day jobs like you and I, but then can actually, you know, pick up a saxophone, pick up a set of drums and, you know, put us all to shame. I'm blessed with a very creative staff who are not short of innovative ideas. I think the challenge I faced was this was a place that for, you know, the previous 85 years had, you know, done its core business or executed its core business incredibly well, but never thought beyond that. And so actually kind of lighting up those light bulbs in people's heads was quite hard. I mean, I was this newcomer and I came in with a PowerPoint presentation with all of these crazy ideas on, you know, how we could extend the brand. What is fabulous is that the staff are kind of very natural custodians of the brand. So they really help guide me walking that tightrope between heritage and the future. So respecting and understanding what Abbey Road stands for, what it is at its core and the heritage, but also being future facing. And so they really helped me navigate that. But, you know, I'm not going to lie, that first 12 months was difficult walking into an organization that hadn't had much change in so long with a huge change agenda. So it took me a while, you know, to share the vision, to really explain the thinking around why, you know, we felt this would be beneficial for the brand, beneficial for the core business, and not detrimental to it. It was a journey of patience and explaining a lot. I got some people buying into the vision and then really coming with me. When you reflect on the 5 years, we have done so much in such a short space of time. It's a real testament to how the team pivoted to a mentality of change and innovation in quite a short space of time.
That makes me think about the COVID situation we're dealing with right now. How have you guys been coping with that shift to digital, which has forced, you know, everybody to kind of go online so much and find resources there? I mean, if you can't get your musicians into the studio, how do you continue to record and make music and do the core business? I'm fascinated by that.
You know, Abbey Road's been open since 1931. We didn't even close for the Second World War. So to close those oak doors for COVID was just a monumental. And yeah, you're right. I mean, if studios aren't open and artists' livelihood, you know, musicians' creativity, where does all of that go? And it's been really interesting. People ask me the question a lot, like, you know, how awful was it? And, you know, it's always very sad closing a building or a facility. But what really is kind of inspiring is that it was also a hugely creative time. Artists have been really busy writing songs, thinking about their next body of work. And also from a tech perspective, technology has responded so quickly. I was speaking to someone earlier this week, jumped years in the period of 5 or 6 months. In terms of technical development. For the music industry specifically and for studios, the first problem to solve was actually live streaming. I mean, you will have seen all of the Instagram, you know, artists playing from their bedrooms. It felt very intimate, even though it was a stream to the world. But now what we're seeing is there's a lot of technology following that up with, you know, how do we get the audio better? How do we get the streaming more sophisticated? What is live streaming going forward, even in a post-COVID world? You know, it can't be that flat stream anymore. It needs to be more interactive. And what can tech do that, to help that? And then from a core studios perspective, in terms of music production, there are a swathe of services that have kind of popped up or rather accelerated their pipeline over the period that are looking at how we would do remote recording. So you can set up in your bedroom effectively and have an engineer, hopefully an Abbey Road engineer at the other end of the line, actually producing and engineering your session. So there's been a flurry of activity, particularly in those two areas, which is brilliant. We are looking now at how we actually start to integrate that into our base business. So that's my challenge over the next kind of 12 months, is to actually, you know, turn that into real business.
You're listening to the Curious Advantage podcast, inspired by the book The Curious Advantage, written by Paul Ashcroft, Simon Brown, and Garrick Jones. Subscribe to the podcast today.
This innovative idea of bringing in the tech innovators, does this all link to what you've been doing there? And this kind of network of tech innovators that you're working with.
That has really opened up that network for us. In fact, during lockdown, we actually ran, we called it Abbey Road Turntables, but we ran a kind of almost a clinic for startups, because some startups were really struggling because financing hadn't come in pre-COVID and it was very bumpy ride for a lot of startups. But also because there were so many of these new ideas, it was actually helping to guide and sponsor those businesses through as we were all sitting at home, but also as the industry had demand for this new technology. So the incubator has served us incredibly well through this period in terms of connections and tentacles out to the startup community. Because unlike EMI Music when they owned Abbey Road back decades ago, where they actually did a huge amount of innovation internally and built, you know, all of the sought after equipment that everyone seeks out today in an analog world, we knew that we couldn't actually invent from the inside out, that we needed to embrace open innovation and a startup community to really move the business forward. So it's paid off in a great way in this period.
One of the things we've seen is key for innovation is around having diverse teams and also tackling any either conscious or unconscious bias that may be in the system as well. I know you've done a lot of work to bring women into innovation and into the music industry. So can you tell us more around that and what you've been doing and why?
Sitting in Abbey Road Studios, obviously I'm privy to a different part of the music industry in terms of music production and the engineering side, which is still abysmally represented in terms of the gender balance. I think this statistic is that 6% of all producers and engineers are women, and we all know that is far too low. I've pulled a group of women together that are engineers and producers, really amazing at their jobs, to try and figure out how we change this. There is a generational shift coming. We've come to the conclusion that there's probably two main issues. One is that girls are not aware of music production and engineering as careers when they're, you know, at school level. So I spend quite a bit of time speaking to young girls about STEM and within that, you know, engineering opportunities in music. And I think that's hugely important that young women are aware of this as a career path. And then the other thing that's interesting to me is there are women who are fabulous producers and engineers, but we don't talk about them enough. And why is that? And we're looking to change that by helping the women who are really knocking it out of the park out there get more press, making sure that they're networked into the industry correctly and creating opportunity for this next generation that we see coming through. The reassuring thing is in the Abbey Road Institute for our diploma course, we're seeing at least 20% female students, which, you know, still isn't equality, but it beats the hell out of 6%. So we're seeing some real change there.
Yeah, it'd be great to see that change. We have an amazing woman producer on our podcast here. So You mentioned artificial intelligence and sort of bringing that into the music industry. And you also talked about how, you know, in the last 5 or 6 months, we've seen maybe more technology advancements than in many years before. So could you tell us a bit on where you see the opportunities are with AI and more broadly, maybe with technology for Abbey Road and for the industry more broadly generally?
AI is a very interesting, it's everywhere already. I mean, it's, you know, your Spotify recommendation list is driven by AI. Our explorations of AI have actually been in the more challenging end, in the sense that we're looking at what artificial intelligence can do in terms of music production and composition. And when we first started the conversation, you know, it's probably 3 or 4 years ago now, it was in that really scary territory of like, what if the computers take over? What if the robots start composing, you know, and it's a race to the bottom? And my colleagues always remind me it's exactly like the conversations around the synthesizer in the 80s when that came out, you know, that people were terrified that this was the beginning of the end of real music. In fact, I think the Musicians Union went as far as to ban it on certain compositions. Wow. What's charming about that story is that artificial intelligence is actually going that way. I mean, it's hugely powerful in terms of what it can do around composition, around production, but it's actually, we're seeing artists and we're seeing the creative community embrace it as a creativity enhancer, right? So we had, you know, if I give you a few examples, we had one AI business in our incubator that was an intelligent microphone, let's put it that way, where you could make a noise like your trumpet noise into the microphone and it would push a MIDI file out the other side. So you could effectively compose a whole track by just using your voice. And the CEO always says, you know, it's using the one instrument you've knew how to use since birth, right? So that kind of thing means that an artist use it in the studio and play with it, because it just means you can kind of compose or showcase your idea really quickly. And then the other one that's interesting that's in the much more computer actually composing sector is a business called LifeScore that we've recently incubated, where what they actually do is they record music by live musicians at Abbey Road or at any other studio. And then they have an algorithm that breaks that down to a cellular level. And then their clever AI is actually then adapt that music and create generative composition that moves with you as you move around your day. So it could be, you know, it could be music to sleep by. It could just be you're in your electric vehicle and the scenery's changed. So the way AI is influencing music isn't this scary robots taking over. It's actually really enhancing creativity and creating new markets, which is really fascinating.
I wonder if that's just true for all things. You know, everybody's so afraid of AI. I mean, the reality is, with all new technology, is an opportunity for us to enhance our creativity and go in all kinds of new directions.
Absolutely. What's interesting, and you know, if you talk about it in the broader sense, it's changing what we as humans define as creativity, right? You know, we don't need to do the mundane. The machine can do that. So actually, we can unleash our own creativity a hell of a lot more, which is really, really exciting.
Isabel, I've got to ask, do you think we've already seen an AI written number one hit record?
No, I don't think so.
To put you on the spot. When do you think we will? How far away is that in the future?
I've seen a producer on a panel on this topic, actually, and he said, or have we?
Exactly.
I mean, AI could create a backline for you, no problem today. It's the lyrics and the artist that sits on top of it that connects.
Yeah.
And I think this is the interesting thing when I had a 15-year career on the very digital side of music. And when you reflect on the whole lot, what's really interesting is, you know, how we consume music has changed, the tools we use to compose music, how we distribute music has changed massively. But actually, the constant in all of that has been, as humans, we need to connect with artists and lyrics and a sentiment that captures either a cultural or a political moment. And that's completely unchanged. But I take a lot of solace in that. It's such an innate human need to connect with music and the people who are creating it that I can't see a world. We have no shared experience with robots.
A curious culture is a game changer. What does curiosity mean for you? Follow hashtag CuriousAdvantage and join the conversation.
Fascinating you say that. I saw a story in the news, maybe last year, of a robot conducting an orchestra. And it's perfectly possible for a robot to conduct an orchestra.
Yeah.
It's just nobody really wanted to listen to it.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to pick up on one word you've said a few times, which is about community.
Yeah.
And community is something that we talk about in The Curious Advantage, about one of the real building blocks of being curious and being successfully curious. So I'm curious about the role of community in Abbey Road, because as you say, it's essentially a building with amazing studios and amazing people working within it. But as you've talked about, it's so much more than that, and possibly always has been, but it extends in so many different ways. Could you talk a little bit about how community is playing a role in helping Abbey Road and also the people who work there be curious?
We have a huge advantage in that there is creative genius going on in our studios every day. So it's such an inspirational place. And therefore, our community or our staff and our team, what we're talking about in corridors is those moments. So I think that kind of keeps the curiosity alive. And then the fact that we all now have quite a clear and shared vision of where the business needs to go, that we're at a place where the creativity that's happening in the studios every day is almost feeding ideation around business. So I was reflecting on this podcast, and I think if we're talking about curiosity, and again, let's not forget the bulk of my team are in studio creating music with all these amazing artists. And our job actually as a business is to remove boundaries or remove the confines of the normal world and within the studio environment to allow innovation. And if you think about what artists are trying to do, they're trying to question the musical norms. They ask, why does it have to sound like that? What happens if I press that button? How do I create my own sound? They're dreaming big the whole time. It's almost limitless. So that energy flows through our community and flows through our building. So once we got our heads around a collaborative vision, it's a machine that keeps feeding itself. We're incredibly lucky.
Are there any particular stories that come to mind from within Abbey Road or from your broader experience that have really sort of sparked your curiosity or where curiosity has really had an impact?
One of our engineers was sent off to find chicken bones from the local butcher so that Muse could test them as drumsticks when they were recording The Origin of Symmetry. They wanted to try and find a different drum sound, you know, and there's probably a story that you've heard already about Pink Floyd, where they recorded they were in an album session for Household Objects, which is the album that followed Dark Side of the Moon. It actually never saw the light of day. They actually used hand mixers, wine glasses, aerosol spray, rubber bands. You know, it was all happening.
This is one you need to see the video of them actually recording it. Yep.
There's kind of a reverence for the rules or a reverence for the norms, which brings all these wonderful stories out of, you know, what people have done, the curious things people have done in the studios, and just the curious characters as well. The thing I love about working in this industry is so many different kinds of brains. And part of my curiosity is understanding people and what makes them tick. And, you know, we've so many different types of brains, different types of people that come through the doors, that it's just, it's always exciting. It's always different. There's always some level of crazy going on in the building, but that's, you know, it's part of the charm.
I love that. To actually be able to, you know, ask the questions, I wonder if this would sound better being played with chicken bones, and then actually to put that into action and try it. And I don't know whether that actually made the cut, but there's fantastic creativity and curiosity.
Yeah.
What's so nice about that is that we often talk about curiosity in a very broad sense, but in a business context, the idea that I've got a new idea, it's quite out there, but I want to try it, doesn't always get a good hearing. It's quite difficult to push that through. In the music business, as in some other creative industries, I think that's really celebrated and encouraged, isn't it? It's like, yeah, how far can we push the boundaries? It's almost a driver just to be out there and be the first to try something or do something different. It seems to me that's really something that I would take away from this, in terms of how you can just be brave and get on with it and see what comes out of that.
I think to bring back into the business world as well is, what's the equivalent of that applied back into the business world of really pushing the boundaries?
It's kind of experiment fast, fail fast, and there's no consequence. And so how do we learn from that in the business world?
Isabel, what makes you personally most curious?
I'm a person that likes to ask a lot of questions. I like to know what makes people tick. And so what drives me is learning new things. And I'm lucky in that I've had a career where I've had very varied experience. And, you know, even now at Abbey Road, we're a small business, but I have lots of different business units. No day is ever the same. You know, I'm surrounded by people who think entirely differently to me, which then charges almost a different energy and a different pace of work, which keeps me interested. So if I had a job that was just the same that I could do in my sleep, I would be so bored. I need to be curious about what's next and challenging myself about the next steps.
And what would be the one thing for our listeners to take away?
There's probably two things to take away. I think one is, we have a lot to learn from the creative process in terms of how innovative it is, the curiosity in the process, and how experimenting and failing fast is actually a positive. That's something we need to translate across. On a personal level, it's actually taking that leap of faith. I often think, what would happen if I never did take that job in music? Or what would happen if I didn't take, you know, I had never run a studio before. What if I hadn't taken the leap and taken on the challenge? I would say, keep challenging yourself and follow your nose in terms of what you're interested in and what really drives you.
Such a brilliant conversation. You've been at the center of shifting from analog to digital, doing it with a great brand and a fantastic business. And the thing that really strikes me is that with all the shift to digital, it's humans and human diversity and human creativity that remains at the center of it all, whether it's digital or analog. It's still there. It's still important. The other thing I'm really struck by is how you've taken the business of Abbey Road and the digital business. It makes the entire brand so much bigger than just a building with fantastic history and amazing facilities. Business goes in so many different directions, from your incubators to your networks of people to bringing women in, your learning programs and so on. It's just amazing and fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us today, Isabel. It's been brilliant.
Thanks, Isabel.
Thank you for having me. It's been a brilliant conversation.
Thank you. Yes, great conversation.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast. The Curious Advantage book is now available to purchase on Amazon. Subscribe to the podcast today. Follow hashtag Curious Advantage and join the conversation. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and John McGinty, and edited by Jill Damatak-Futter.